Focus on Life.
Hello, welcome to Lucas on Life. I'm Jeff Lucas. Tonight, let's talk about complaining. It's something that we all do, but apparently with the advent of social media, it seems that griping, moaning, complaining is on the increase. Apparently, complaining decreased during the awful time of the COVID lockdown. Perhaps under pressure, we were all a bit more tolerant then. But now, complaining might be viewed as a new epidemic. A supermarket starts stocking hot cross buns straight after Christmas, and people complain. A cling wrap brand shifts its serrated cutter bar from the base of the box to the inside of the lid, and there's complaining. The maker of M&M's chocolates changes its marketing, and people complain. Each time these events happen, people took to social media, which was flooded with complaints. Psychology Today website says that people who constantly complain can alienate those around them and harm their own mental health. And all of this challenges me because there are days when I think that I'm turning into Victor Meldrew. Remember Victor? For those unfamiliar with his name, he was the poker-faced and eternally grumbling misery who staggered from one calamity to another in the now discontinued One Foot in the Grave. His capacity for ineptitude is only surpassed by his legendary ability to complain, his catchphrase being, "I don't believe it." For the ever-tut-tutting Victor, life was nothing more than a series of joined-up irritations, all of which he both expected and yet was seemingly surprised by. He seemed convinced that someone somewhere was plotting to mess up his life, hence my terror at the thought of becoming like him. He definitely affects others around him. Victor's wife suffers long because she lives with him. I commented to my wife Kay recently that as a preacher, I sometimes get fed up with the sound of my own voice. She smiled and said that she understood exactly how I felt. Now, of course, we can all have one of those days, but being irritated and complaining, it can become an addictive habit. Some of us have apparently made a life choice to be frustrated and even offended from birth. If we could have, we'd have slapped the midwife who delivered us. Life before birth, it was so much simpler. All you had to do was bob around in the womb, suck your thumb occasionally, smile for the scan photo, and entertain the folks outside by occasionally kicking your mother from the inside. Easy peasy. And then one day, you take a short neck-twisting trip, whereupon some medical vandal cuts your food tube off at the navel, tips you upside down, and smacks you until you cry. An irony of it all, one is then required to celebrate this day of pain with cake and cards every year hereafter. Look at life like that, and you're a Meldrew, whose dying words would probably be a breathless complaint about hospital food. So how does one get delivered from the spirit of Victor, this addiction to complaining? Surely one answer is to realise that Christians aren't promised that they'll escape the boring bits of life. We get colds, bank statements with red numbers, sore feet and delayed in traffic. It's not all part of a dark plan to bring us down. It's just called another day of life. And surely another help is to compare our tiny skirmishes into irritation with the really vexing and indeed heartbreaking challenges that so many others around the world face daily. Being held up in metal congestion is a small price to pay for living in a situation where most of us have enough food. Phil Collins is right. Most of us live in comparative terms in what is another day in paradise. Am I actually suggesting, when tempted to go into emotional meltdown about something trivial, that we should stop and consider that it's not really such a big deal and pause to pray for those who face real terrors? Well, yes, we could do worse. Ultimately, griping is a huge waste of life. We can live our whole lives, quite literally, with one foot in the grave. Is that the way we're supposed to be? I don't believe it. We're talking about complaining, and I think I might be turning into a bat. the metamorphosis is quite advanced. It's really rather worrying that I actually hang upside down on some days. This due to my acquisition of a piece of gym equipment. I've been getting promotional letters from the American Association for Retired People, which means that I can get great deals on dentures and cut price tickets for coach trips to the seaside. And so, in frantic search of youth, I bought something called an inverter. Now, this strange piece of machinery looks quite like an instrument of torture, which is what it is. Clamped firmly into it, the machine flips me upside down, stretching out my vertebrae and dumping every ounce of blood into my head. I look flush crimson with embarrassment for hours. Extremely overweight people should not attempt this upside-down move, as suffering concussion as a result of being slapped soundly in the head by your own belly is not fun. Kay, my wife, also inverts, because the family that hangs upside down together stays together. It's all very bat-like. But the main reason for my worry about turning into a bat is my discovery that bats spend their lives yelling. It's how they do life. It's all to do with their built-in navigational system. I used to think of the bat as being as blind, as you guessed it, as a bat. Extensive research, 5 minutes on the internet, reveals that this is actually just an urban myth, like the ridiculous notions that Elvis is alive and living in Birmingham, or that the overhead projector was a great invention. Bats actually do have rather keen eyesight, but they also rely on something called echolocation in order to live. Echolocation enables a bat to emit high-frequency sound waves that bounce off of an object, such as a tasty mosquito, and that produces a type of sound echo that returns to the bat's ears. In short, bats get through life by yelling. That's how the little critter makes sense of his existence, by non-stop yelling and by measuring the world's response to his yells. So bats spend all of their lives yelling. They yell at each other, they yell at their lunch, they yell at the trees, they yell at the neighbors, and they yell at their babies. They're born yelling and they die yelling, and when they're really on a roll, they can yell up to 200 times a second. Most of their yelling is inaudible to the human ear, for which we must be grateful. And that's where I come in. I don't actually yell much, at least out loud. But as I've mentioned earlier, I've discovered that I can spend too much of my time yelling within and thus out of earshot of others. I can live with a simmering irritation, a silent shout that is the emotional equivalent of a kettle forever close to the boil. I allow my evening to be wrecked by that most British of traditions, which is bad service in restaurants, and instead of laughing at the 40 Towers' ineptitude, I quietly bristle and prepare myself to complain. And in church, I'm irritated by the worship song that insists that I declare that I'm mildly ecstatic during every waking moment because of Jesus. And I nurse mildly violent thoughts about that strange person on the train who has a Barry Manilow ringtone on their phone. All of these events conspire to keep me potentially yelling within. Thus, thankfulness and gratitude is replaced by an ongoing internal rant that simmers just beneath my skin and then sometimes moves into actual complaining. And then there are some people who take all of this fuming to the next step and spend every waking moment of their lives literally yelling because complaining is their forte. They're not happy unless they're not happy, and they forever test others to see what reaction they can get to their yelling. Rage is what they do best, so each day is another series of encounters where they get on people's nerves, wind them up, and put them down. What a life! Seeing everything upside down, mostly in the dark, yelling, and usually parked very close to a pile of bat poo. Great for bats, bad for humans. Now, as we've been talking about complaining, let's know that some complaining is a good thing. It shows companies, for example, that we're ready to hold them to account. But some of us use complaining as a means of connection We're actually socially relating on the basis of sharing our complaint, or we're feeling like we're making an impact, like our opinion actually counts for something. Sadly, psychologists tell us that sometimes we complain and it's all about downward social comparison. We boost our own sense of self-esteem by celebrating, if you will, and then complaining about the deficiencies in others, the service that they bring, the experience that we have. But sometimes we endlessly complain because we're preoccupied with things that really don't matter. Recently, I was sent on a mission. My wife, Kay, dispatched me to the supermarket in pursuit of a packet of guacamole mix, which is something you add to avocado to produce bright green slime. This stuff looks really good with salad, but it's reminiscent of that yucky ectoplasm in the film Ghostbusters. The aisles of the supermarket were crammed with eager mutant ninja shoppers, some of whom were steering their trolleys with attitude. They niftily maneuvered those unwieldy wire contraptions with the deftness of a Grand Prix racing driver. I wanted to join in with the fun, but felt that a great big shopping cart to carry a single packet of guacamole mix was slight overkill. The checkout queues were long, and so I headed to the express line, reserved exclusively for those shoppers with no more than 10 items. Two or three people were ahead of me, including an elderly chap whose basket seemed suspiciously loaded. Had he not seen the gigantic sign hanging over the till that implied that anyone with more than 10 items in the express lane would be hung, drawn, and quartered? My eyes narrowed. As he placed each of his purchases on the shiny black belt, I counted them under my breath. 7, 8, he's still legal, but only just. 9, 10, okay, mister, you've reached the limit now. 11, 12, all right, this is really pushing things. 13, 14, 15, someone arrest this man. He is over the maximum limit by a whopping 50%. How come the checkout lady was smiling so benevolently at this blatant criminal? Did she not know that we had a 15-item monster in our midst? My feet were tapping, my brow was furrowed, and a roar of outrage was building inside me because of the awful injustice of it all. And suddenly, I stopped and saw myself, a grown man hot and bothered by being kept waiting a whole 20 seconds, or however long it actually takes to scan those extra 5 items. And then I wondered how often churches are destroyed, friendships are irreparably harmed, and marriages disintegrate because we're so good at being bothered about things that don't really matter, and we spend our lives in worthless complaining. Like the Israelites of the Old Testament who allowed a man to divorce his wife for burning a meal, too many of us spend our lives armed to the teeth with a magnifying glass making minutiae massive. Molehills grow to Everest size proportions because of our obsession with having things done the right way, which usually means our way. Woe betide the unfortunate offender who says the wrong thing, looks at us the wrong way, or does anything to mess with our Sinatra-like determination to have life my way. Of course, we cover our tracks by kidding ourselves that we are perfectionists. Perhaps better words to describe some of our behaviour would be selfish, immature, or arrogant. And we Christians can take pickiness and thereafter complaining to an Olympic level. Not many churches get into conflict over major issues of doctrine, but if the drummer plays too loud on Sunday morning, the version of the Bible used is not my version of choice, or God forbid, someone actually rearranges the chairs, or the vicar suggests relocating or even removing the pews, then the Third World War will possibly break out. Being people of conviction that we are quick to adopt the unyielding stance of Martin Luther, who, as a champion of the Reformation, famously cried, "Here I stand, I can do no other." Now that's a statement of greatness when you're defending the doctrine of justification by faith, but not terribly appropriate for an incongregational punch-up about what colour to paint the church toilets. Sometimes I wish there was a Bible verse that says, "Lighten up, my people," or "Chill out, says the Lord." Perhaps the closest thing available is Jesus' rebuke to the Pharisees because they gave their attention to what didn't matter while ignoring what was vital, picking gnats out of their drinks but gulping down great big camels. The book Don't Sweat the Small Stuff has sold millions, and rightly so. We need to save our perspiration for what really counts. And perhaps if we do, this week, there'll be a little less unnecessary complaining. See you next week. Lucas on Life.